pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone, tonight.
Appreciate everybody coming. We're going to take this a bit out of order tonight. Normally, we have or on the agenda of the audit committee meeting first. What we're going to do first is student recognition for our superintendent's report.
Yes, we will start with Mr. Thode. I think he has to recognize two of our outstanding athletes tonight.
I don't know if the board got a chance to see this. This was actually from Newsday. Our tech department blew it up and cut and pasted it and put it on a board so we could present it here, at least so everybody could see. But it is online on newsday.com. So I'd like to invite Eric and Casey up with their coaches. So I'd like to recognize, obviously, Chris O'Brien and Coach Bielski for the boys' program, Coach Sullivan and Coach Novello for the girls' program. And I do know Casey's dad coaches her privately. Eric, I'm not sure what coaches you privately, but it's a community effort to make such outstanding players. But to put it into perspective, they were named top 50 on Long Island. Now, just understand, in Suffolk County alone with private schools, you're talking about 70 schools, boys and girls. And then Nassau is not, I don't think it's quite as many. So you're probably well over 120, 130 schools, 11 kids, 11 starters on each team, and we have one student athlete from each program that are in the top 50 kids projected by Newsday. So it is an amazing feat to have one. We have two, and it's a tribute to everybody that's involved in their athletic careers, our coaching staff, and obviously the support of the Board of Education. So I just want to present them. We'll put this up in the school. We'll make something for the boardroom as well. But I just found out about Eric today. I knew Casey because she had to get her jersey. So that's why we're, as far as presentation, this is what we were able to come up with today. So just a round of applause for these two guys. Can I just have the board come up? I'm going to take a picture. The coaches, one on each side, if you don't mind, on the appropriate side.
Get to go in front.
All right. One, two, three. We just got up here. Great. Thank you, guys.
Congratulations. You got a great hard work.
Congratulations. Thank you. Thank you. We are so proud of you.
Okay, I just have another presentation. So I have another presentation last year. Casey was honored as All-State, which is an outstanding achievement. Coach Sullivan and I, actually Casey came to me yesterday, I'm not sure, yesterday, asked me if I'd do a letter of recommendation for college. So I was speaking to Coach Sol, and we were talking about her, and we ended up putting together a recommendation for her. So instead of me giving a speech, I'm going to read you her recommendation that we wrote for her, okay, if you don't mind. So if you want to identify someone who really epitomizes as a student athlete, you highlight Casey Luongo. Casey is not only a top student athlete, but is also an extremely well-rounded and diverse person. Words cannot truly define who or what she is, but I can tell you that Casey will be an extremely successful person in your school and will be an asset to the performance and reputation of your soccer program. Casey, and this might be a little bit off, so we have to fine-tune it, but Casey has an outstanding soccer resume both privately and interscholastically. She's played on high-level Premier and Region 1 teams, as well as New York State ODP team. She was varsity all-conference player in 8th grade and led the team in goals, leading scorer in 9th grade and awarded all-league, all-conference, all-county, all-state. Injured in 10th grade, she was still team captain and instrumental in helping coach her school team to victory. As an 11th grader, Casey was in her third year as the varsity captain and received all-county, all-Long Island, all-state, and MVP. She led Suffolk County in all of Long Island in goals with 31. Entering her senior year, Casey was named captain once again and identified as a top 50 player on Long Island by Newsday. Casey owns a 94 GPA and has been part of 5 varsity scholar-athlete teams and has played in 2 New York State Final Four championships with her varsity team. Her skill, knowledge, and athletic ability are off the charts. We have the highest respect for Casey, the student, the athlete, and most important, Casey, the person. Casey is a caring and introspective person. She cares about people, the team, and the community around her. She lives her life understanding what is important in life and continually displays her desire to make a difference. The review of her accomplishments and successes can easily tell you about Casey, the player. I prefer to tell you what your program and school will gain from Casey. Casey will give you her everything. She'll give you. She'll never give anything but her best. She is competitive and strives to be the best in all aspects of her life. She will make people around her better, in class, on campus, and on the team. She is unselfish and will make the right pass or the tactical decision, trying to involve those around her on the field. She wants the team and her teammates to succeed. She plays within herself and truly understands the game and how to get the best of her teammates. She will never disappoint anyone in her effort, compassion, or willingness to excel. She'll be a true role model and advocate for her school. Casey is an exceptional personality, person, and athlete. She has a calm demeanor, especially in the face of adversity and pressure. Every school at every level wants to utilize their successes to highlight their institution. Casey is the advocate and role model to do that. We often say that sports gives athletes life lessons. This is true, and the lessons Casey has learned throughout her athletic career have laid a foundation for success in her life. We are in awe of Casey because she is dynamic and relentless. She wants to improve every day, and she has that passion to get better at everything she attempts. There is a tremendous amount of depth to her, and she continually strives to evolve. She doesn't settle. She is self-motivated and pushes herself beyond her comfort levels, even at the risk of failure. She will do what is right because she knows nothing else. She's a shining star and such a wonderful inspiration to those around her. We truly hope you look into her as the complete package. With all of her success thus far, she is the type of scholar and athlete who will blossom even more in the college environment. Her best is yet to come. Casey is someone who, as impressive as she is so much more. Casey is a once-in-a-lifetime athlete and a can't-miss prospect. I had problems because my eyes are going. Sorry. I was trying to fake it.
Thank you, guys.
Congratulations. All right, one more?
Yes.
Okay. Just on behalf of the athletic department, I just want the Board of Education to know and the community to know. There is a program from New York State. It's called the Good Sportsmanship Program. And really what it is it's not so much that we are always the best at sportsmanship. That's not the aim of it. The aim is that we are continually evolving. We're trying to teach lessons. We're going to have things in place that promotes sportsmanship, and we were the recipient of the Good Sports Award this past year, actually the past 2 years. So I just wanted to present the board a plaque, which we keep in our athletic wing, and I want you to be aware that we are continually evolving and being evaluated, and as far as I know, doing a great job. So on behalf of New York State Public High School Athletic Association and Section 11, I just want to present the plaque to the Board of Education. Okay? If you want to come up, board members, anyone?
Just one or two at least, yeah. Thank you.
Great. Come on. There you go. We'll flank you.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and now Jill, how are we going to follow that?
I was going to say that.
Okay, we didn't mean to do that
to
you.
The poor auditor.
Yes.
Here.
I think right there
okay,
is
good.
On my board.
Thank you.
And you all know Jill Sanders, and she's here during our planning session. What was the planning session?
Oh, my gosh. Seems like a long time ago.
Yeah, see,
probably
right,
May or June.
Months ago.
So just for everybody else, we have an audit committee meeting that we're going to go into now. You're welcome to stay and listen.
Okay. So thank you to the Board of Education for inviting me to present the report. And so the document that you have here is the result of the audit for the year ending June 30th, 2016. And we're not going to go, obviously, through all the pages, but just some overall statements. The district finished up the year in good financial condition. You put forth a budget. It was a budget that you were able to manage, and you were successful in managing it. And it's very important in terms of the tax cap to be able to sustain financial ability to go forward. And so with the financial results for this year, you are able to appropriate money to reduce the next year's tax levy, which is a good thing, and that came from not spending all of your budget. And you were able to look at replenishing some monies in the reserve that you have that you had to utilize for separation pay. Okay? So I hope you noted that when you looked at the financial statement. Behind tab one is the financial statement itself. And behind the table of contents is our independent auditor's report. Now, as I've said to the board before, I'm not going to read the whole document, but it's what's known as an unmodified report. It sounds bad, but it's a good thing. What it means is that we think the financial statements fairly present. And that's important because you get information throughout the year from the business office and from the superintendent as to the financial status of the school district. One of the things that we look at is not only the numbers at June 30th, 2016, but the information that comes forth to the Board of Education and the meaningfulness of the numbers on an interim basis. So we feel that the information that you get is very good information to work with. After those two pages of auditor's opinion, we have some management's discussion and analysis information, which is just summary information on the financial statement, and we give you some key highlights. And once again, the district was very aggressive in getting whatever operating grant money that they could. We know federal and state money is drying up, but you could see in the third bullet, $1,100,000 in round numbers of operating grant revenue was brought in by the district, and this is to support remedial programs that the school district has. The other thing that's worth noting is the final bullet in that financial highlights. So as everyone is aware, the bond issue had been approved back in May of 2015 in an amount not to exceed, it's $8,272,000 in round numbers. During this year, the school district started the work in phases at the buildings, and so when you looked at the capital fund, because that's where all of that those expenditures reside, there's over $400,000 worth of capital fund expenditures. And what the district has managed to do, because they're working with within their cash flow, not having to borrow as of June 30th. What they did is they utilized their own cash flow. They said, let's look at temporary financing in August. A BAN, or bond anticipation note, was issued.
Is that bullet on the tax levy, the 1.3?
Yes. Which 1.3?
What's the difference? Right. So that's a 3-point. What was it?
The 1.3, which is up third bullet up from the bottom.
Right.
It's 2016.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the change in the levy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Did you want me to note that?
No.
Okay. Yeah. So we're looking at a different year. Maybe that's okay. You'll note when you looked at the subsequent events that because the district was able to manage their own cash flow, they didn't have to issue the bond anticipation notes until August. And when you looked at the disclosures on page 47, I hope you noted because of the district's good financial condition under item number 19, to borrow that $5 million, the interest that's being paid by the district is 0.934%. which that comes from having a good, strong financial position. Same thing, the district has to issue tax anticipation notes because revenue doesn't come forth until later in the year. And you can see the amount of money that needed to be borrowed for cash flow reasons in August. And you can see the preferential interest rate below 1%. Okay. Going back to page 3, there's some information that's in the balance of management's discussion and analysis, which summarizes the financial statements that are further on in this document. I think one of the things that's helpful maybe for the board is on page 9, because I'm a pretty visual person. People are always interested, if I'm looking at the whole percentage-wise, where are my revenues coming from, okay? And, you know, charges for services is a fairly good-sized portion of the revenue that the school district generates. What is that? So it's tuition for children that are educated by the school district that don't necessarily reside in this district. For special programs, there's Native American revenue that's generated. That's the 15%, and it's a little bit over the previous year. The operating grant money stayed fairly consistent, and you could see property taxes and STAR as a whole about 52%, almost 53%, same as last year. The state sources are a little bit less than last year, and there's some miscellaneous revenue. So for all intents and purposes, the breakout of the revenue fairly stayed within the same parameters as last year. Equally as important is the graph underneath that, which talks about the spending. So as you would expect, or as you would hope, 80%, over 80% of the spending is in the instructional area, and then the supportive services for instruction, and you can see that those represented a little bit shy of 13% for this year and 13% for the year before. Okay. Going to page 10, on item number 4, there's a summary of the fund balance, so we know that the fund balance has different components, and this is the aggregation of all the financial results since the first day that the school district's been in operation, and there are authorized reserves under general municipal law and education law that are available, and the district does have some of these, which is good, because as you know, when you had to pay out that terminal pay during this previous year, if you didn't have your employee benefit accrued liability reserve, and that was over $300,000, you would have had to go somewhere within the budget and try to create funding to be able to do that. But fortunately, you had some money set aside in your employee benefit accrued liability reserve, and you were able to use that to do such.
What is the target of that supposed to be as compared to kind of your budget or your teacher expense?
All right. So that's a good question, and what I'll direct you to page 15 of the financial statement. So on page 15 in the liability section, you'll see due and payable after 1 year. There's something called compensated absences payable. It's $2,376,000. And then there's a short-term piece of $200,000. So you...
Where are you, I'm sorry?
In the due and payable after 1 year section, there's something called compensated absences payable.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see this $2.7 million there. And then in the short-term piece...
2.3, right?
No, I have 2.... Yeah, I'm sorry, you're right, 2.3,
yep.
Correct? And then there's $200,000 in the short-term piece.
Mm-hmm.
So there's $2.5 million worth of potential payouts as of June 30th. So the relationship is, as you have funding in place for $1.1 million, you're about 50% funded towards what your liability is. But the most important thing is as people leave the district and budgets are tighter, you need to be able to have a funding source, and this is what you've been able to utilize to do that. So there's no magical number, if that's the question.
Mm-hmm.
It's
50% of that.
Of your total exposure at June 30th.
And that's reasonable, is what you're saying.
There are districts that are 100% funded. Okay, that's, you know, the cap is 100%.
Okay.
I think the state is interested, especially with the tax cap in place, with districts being in a position that they've looked at their reserves and they've made a determination, I think, to your point. Do we have what we need to have there to perpetuate this business?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're in a good place. You were able to replenish what you used.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not able to replenish what you used, that could be problematic because that number will continue to grow. People earn they earn days every year. And then it's a function of where do we have the mechanism to pay it out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Unassigned, importantly, this, you know, real property tax law says you can have up to 4% of next year's budget, and that's where you are. I'm back on page 10. Your unassigned is $1.6 million. It's the same as last year, pretty much in the same ballpark, because the budget didn't change significantly between the 2 years. And you could see that in the assigned fund balance area, the $1.2 million that we talked about, that was what was appropriated and used to reduce the levy for 16-17. And then the unappropriated piece there is encumbrances that roll forward from the previous years. So that's pretty much what the components of your fund balance are. And you could see overall the change off to the right went down by $52,000. And so you want to be in a situation as a school district that you're at least where you were in the previous year or even better. Okay, that's, I think, the goal. In the school lunch fund, just sticking with this chart, you could see that the fund balance went from $265,000 to $219,000. So you have a self-sustaining school lunch fund, which is good because some school districts do not have that. I think the tricky thing this year was that the food service management company contracted with the district for an amount that was extremely high. And so where you typically saw profits in previous years, because of the contract price that they looked at, you experienced an operating loss of $45,000.
Was some of this used for capital as well, or no? Wasn't there?
Well, there were some purchases of equipment.
Yeah, I remember the equipment that we had.
A little bit of equipment.
Right.
But this is unusual, because if you looked at previous year's financial statements, even with the equipment costs, you were able to generate a pretty good profit.
Because you would look at this, though, and you would say, wow, in 4 years, then we're at a loss, right? You would look at this and say the 200 is gone in 4 years. Is that not...
Right. If things continue the way that they
Which
are,
that's you either have to negotiate a lower price with them or higher price.
I think Carol.
We're going to be reevaluating that.
Okay.
Okay. I know Carol was looking into that.
How much of that $45,000 was capital?
About 20, I think. Does that sound right? About 20.
Or refrigerators or something.
Yeah, some big items out.
Yeah. I remember.
Okay. And then within the capital project fund, I think the best way to really get an understanding of this is to look back at page 54. And so you might remember on page 54, there's a schedule that shows you by project what's been budgeted. And then you could see in the middle of that schedule what's been expended this year, what's available to be expended, and then what the sourcing for that money is, that those projects are, okay?
What is this through? What date? Through June 30th?
This is through June 30th. So what this shows you is the pieces of the bond issue that are going to be spent or captured in this schedule, this $418,000 worth of bond expenditures that have been incurred, potential bond expenditures, okay, or authorized bond expenditures. And the remaining amount to be expended is going to be the difference off to the side, $7.9 million.
Does expended mean bills actually paid, cash flow out? Or is
no,
it
means it expenses paid? Incurred.
We've incurred it, so we got the invoice, but we haven't paid the bill.
Correct. A combination of we've paid it or it's sitting in
right.
accounts payable.
Yep.
Right, okay. And you could see then that it looks like there's a deficit in the capital project fund, but there really isn't, because as I mentioned before, the school district's been using their own money, and whenever you use your own money and you don't have permanent financing, there's a temporary deficit until such time as you issue the debt. Okay? It's just the way accounting works. Okay. Going back to management's discussion and analysis then, if I could, at the bottom of page 10 and the top of page 11, we give you some information, pretty much what we just discussed. And so in the middle of page 11, there's a discussion about the change in the unassigned fund balance. You open the year with, in round numbers, $1.6 million of unassigned fund balance, which was 4% of the next year's budget. If we look back at page 48, how did we do on the revenue side of our budget? You could see that we expected to be able to generate $38,860,000 worth of revenue. The district generated $39,334,000 of revenue, so it was over and above what we had expected. And you can see it was predominantly in the charges for services area, so this is tuition for services provided to students outside of the school district. And if you had the previous year's financial statement in front of you, the thing that's interesting to note about this area is the district generated an additional $400,000 over and above the previous year. So that's pretty much, you know, when you're sizing your budget, you look at what you generated during a previous year to figure out what to put there. So it's pretty much in line. That variance is pretty much in line with the growth. Okay. So that adds to your unassigned fund balance. And then the next thing that will add to your unassigned fund balance is on page 49, the results of the spending side of your budget.
Can you just go back one thing?
Sure.
So when you go to the appropriated fund balance, so we apply 1.2, and then the 121,852, that was appropriated reserve. I just want to make sure I'm thinking about this right. That was that from the employee benefit accrued liability?
That was from the retirement contribution reserve. But you're
retirement.
Correct. You applied as a board. You appropriated through resolution money out of the employee that benefit accrued liability reserve. But that's not going to show here, because where you'll see it is look at the next column, final budget. The difference between the 121
mm-hmm.
and the 437 is the additional amount of money, you're correct, that the Board of Education appropriated.
And that
was to cover terminal pay during the year.
Yep.
So that was the one budget revision.
But the 121 was put
was
in the
part of the original budget.
It's from the employment. Where's the employment reserve on page 10?
On page 10.
Is that there?
The employee, the retirement contribution reserve is where the original 121 came out of.
So is that number, like, how does that number, that 913202, the question I'm trying to ask is that reserve the right amount for the liability that we have?
Okay. That number is not capped by the state under the statute. And so it's a function of whether or not you want to cover a single year's worth of contribution, multiple years' worth of contributions. I think you have to view it in the context of that the rates for the employee's retirement system have not dropped that dramatically across the years as opposed to the teacher's retirement system. And if you looked at the GASB 68 information...
So the 913 retirement is... Just ERS.
Not TRS. You can't use that for a TRS contribution. Okay. And I think the other thing that maybe you want to look at is, if you remember, GASB 68, part of this financial statement tells you your proportionate share of the employee retirement system liability. Mm-hmm. So if you go back to page 43, and obviously this is just a paper entry because the state's not coming to you right now and saying we want your liability.
Right.
But if you look at the top of page 43, under the current assumption, which that retirement system is saying is 7% discount rate, your share of the liability, because the system is not 100% funded, is $2.3 million.
So if everything came due today, it would be $2.3 million.
Well, you have this off-balance sheet potential exposure of $2.3 million. I think the fact of the matter is that the rates are not going to drop that dramatically for the retirement system unless the market changes significantly, because the system has not funded completely the liability.
So there's an off-balance sheet liability of $2.3 for which we have 913 reserved.
You have 913 reserved for whatever contributions are assessed by the board.
Right.
And the board assesses contributions irrespective of this because it's on a rolling basis. But my point really is that $913,000, I would look at it in terms of the fact that the rates are probably not coming down that significantly.
Right.
And rather than have to raise taxes for it, okay, because it's going to be a decent amount of money, you can look at what the charge has been. It's back on page 39. There's a table for the last 3 years. You're paying the retirement system, employees' retirement system, $603,000, okay? And you could see that the rate really didn't change that much between 15 and 16. So to answer your question, you have a year and a half's worth of contributions in your reserve.
And but they're not fluctuating drastically.
No.
And why? Is there a TRS?
Yes. So no, there's no reserve for TRS. The state didn't authorize a reserve for
that. So that's typical. No district has a reserve for TRS.
As the superintendent can probably talk about, because he's been in a number of meetings and we've been in a number of meetings, it was on the table for many years. It was taken off the table. And I think ultimately at this point, I haven't heard anything lately, I don't know if you have, that they're looking at creating anything for funding the teacher's retirement system.
Thank you.
So back on page 11, because we were looking at the variances then on the unassigned fund balance, okay, and we were looking back at the support for that. So if you look at the spending side of the budget on page 49 then, of the $40 million plus budget, $1.1 million had not been spent. So it's about 2.8% of your budget. So that's a pretty good prediction of what you thought you were going to spend during the year, because obviously it's your best guesstimate as to where you think you're going to end up. And to the extent, and you can look at this, it's not really one particular area that generated that fund balance on the spending side. It's a little bit here and a little bit there. And so what happens with that, then that gets added to your unassigned fund balance, too. So going back to page 11, you add that, you add the revenue pickup, you look at what you replenished in the employee benefit accrued liability reserve, that comes out. You look at what you assigned to reduce the levy for the following year, and you close the year with $1,649,000 of unassigned fund balance. It's 4%. You want to be at 4% of next year's budget. It's all you could have. Once upon a time, it was 5, went down to 2, it's up to 4. But that's really, you want to be at the most. You want to be at the 4%, and that's where you are. Okay? On bottom of page 11 and top of page 12 is some additional information on what I just discussed. At the bottom of page 12 and the top of page 13, we give you the change in the capital assets, and you know most of that is buildings and improvements. And that table will show, if we look at it in 17 then, to the extent that you expend money for the capital projects, that table's going to show an increased amount of money, right?
What table?
page 13 at the top.
13, okay.
Okay. In the middle of page 13, you have some debt, and you had reissued some debt to take advantage of lower interest rates in the past. So you could see the issue date, you could see the interest rates, and you could see the outstanding amount. And you could see the first issue, 2010. It's going down pretty quickly. And then in addition to that, you have a little bit of installment purchase debt with respect to the energy performance contract at a fairly favorable interest rate, 3.38%.
So the BAM notes aren't on here, though?
No, because it's short-term financing.
That's only long-term. So when they get rolled into long-term, that...
Right, if you roll whatever piece you roll in.
Right.
Okay, correct. And then we give you the credit rating. So you have a very good credit rating through Moody's, as you can see. And we talk about the debt limit. We give a description as to next year's economic factors and budgets, just as a relationship as far as the increase, where the budget's going to be funded through at the bottom of page 13. At the top of 14, we talk about the tax cap. I think that's here for a little while. The property tax freeze credit, and then the property tax relief credit, okay, which will be available for 16, 17, and going forward into 19, 20. Okay, so that's, you know, that as we know, there's going to be credit for $130 in the first year to the extent that your gross income is no more, your adjusted gross income is no more than $275,000, and then it's indexed to your STAR savings for years after that. And so there'll be more information coming on that in subsequent years because it's new. On page 15, you might remember this two sets of financial statements, and this is where it gets really confusing. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on 15 and 16 because this is the district overall. It's all funds together. It's on the accrual basis. Big difference between this and the way the districts keep their books and records, which is on the modified accrual basis, is this includes fixed assets net of depreciation and all long-term debt, whether it's payable out of next year's budget or budgets 10 years from now. More importantly, though, on page 17 is the way the district maintains their books and records. So you'll see a balance sheet for each of the governmental funds, and you can see it's fairly straightforward. You have cash, you have receivables, you have a little bit of inventory in the school lunch fund, and you have your typical payables, okay, based upon the cycle that they get paid. Why is the teacher's retirement system liability so big? It's the timing of when it gets paid. It's taken out of the state aid from the school district during the fall. So what happens is the contribution accumulates on the books and records, plus the withholding that's paid towards it, and then the first round of state aid that the school district gets, the state's satisfied, they hold it back, and they pay the retirement system. It's the only reason why it's as large as it is. We talked about the fund balance, which is the difference between the assets and the liabilities. The page behind this on 18, we reconcile the fund balance to the statement of net position. So the way that this works, if you wanted to follow it, would be if you look at the top of page 18, if I took all my governmental funds together on the modified accrual basis, it's $6,097,000. And where would you see that number? If you go to page 17 and you look at the row, second from the bottom, off to the right, that's what I'm starting with. There are certain additions and subtractions, as I mentioned before. Biggest addition are my fixed assets, because on the district's books and records, fixed assets are not included. And the biggest reduction is going to be any long-term debt. And so that reconciles me back to a total net position of $12.2 million. And where would you see that? If you turn back to page 15, at the bottom of the statement of net position, you'll see that the total there is $12,270,000. So if you wanted to, you can reconcile that. On page 19, so these are the revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balance based upon the way the district maintains their books and records. And so probably the most important number on this page is the third number from the bottom in the general fund. So what's the change when I look at operating surplus or operating shortfall? So there's a little bit of shortfall. It's almost a break even, okay? It's a good thing, okay? Because obviously if you have a shortfall, then you're eating into your unassigned fund balance, and that gives you less flexibility to fund those things that you need to fund on either an emergency or unanticipated basis. Special aid fund always breaks even because we don't recognize revenue until we incur the expenditures. Unfortunately, the district has to pay for everything up front, and then they have to wait for the money to come in from the state. School lunch fund, we talked about the shortfall, and the capital project fund, we talked about the net shortfall there. On page 20, If you wanted to do the same thing and reconcile this, we would be looking at the bottom of page 19, third row from the bottom, our aggregate net change in fund balance is 516,540, and we have some differences. Major difference between this presentation and the full accrual, which is on the statement of activities, and that's back at page 16, is that we have this charge-off for net other post-employment benefits, and you might remember this. Under GASB, the district's required to show their share of unfunded health insurance for retirees. We know that you pay as you go, and your contributions are reflected through your budget. But there's this notion that as we have more people who retire and live longer, we're going to be paying more health insurance as an entity. And so the profession was concerned, without the reader understanding that this off-balance sheet number is getting bigger and bigger, that you needed to know this, and it needed to be presented on the accrual basis financial statement.
Where on 16 is this?
This is going to be back. It's included in your various functions and programs, but your ultimate liability, where you're going to see it, is back on 15. It's the, and you look in the liability section, it's $12,158,000. Okay, so this is for
health benefits
for retirees. So that's based on an actuarial study, and there's more information on that in this financial statement. And that information starts at the, let's see, at the top of page, I think it's 42. Let's see, I'm sorry. In the middle of page 44. The discussion starts about what the district's responsibility is and the fact that employees contribute towards the health insurance depending upon their contracts. And then at the bottom of page 44 and going to the top of page 45, each year the school district has an actuary either update the valuation or perform a new valuation. And based upon that valuation, the actuary said, and it's under D, that the actual liability based upon the number of people who are collecting health insurance benefits and in retiree mode or getting paid their health insurance benefits for the district as current employees is $31,485,000. That's based upon a discount rate of 5%. And if we were looking at having to fund for that evenly across a number of years, and it's 30 years, what would I need to put away every year? So the way that this works is, if you look at that table at the top of page 45, my annual contribution, third row from the bottom of the table, is $1,387,000, and my cumulative liability, since this has been going on so far for paper purposes, is $12,158,000. Okay, but that's the only reason why I'm bringing it up. It's nothing, you know. Obviously, there's nothing you can do about it. There's no way to fund for this obligation, and as I said, it's information that's required under GASB. Is that's a reconciling item between your statement of revenues and expenditures and your statement of activities. And so it just needs to be considered when you're looking at the two sets of statements side by side.
So that shows up when we do budgeting in our employee health costs. That one point, whatever we pay for retirees.
Yes. Okay. Yes, that's included in your budgeted number. That's correct. On page 21, for the trust and agency funds, and you have a small scholarship fund, you could see the balance sheet or the statement of net position. And then you could see on page 22, there's a little bit of investment earnings that were collected during the year, and there were some scholarships that were awarded. On pages 23, all the way up through page 46 or 47, there's some additional information on the numbers in the financial statements. We looked at page 48 and 49. Those are budget to actual schedules. Page 50, when we talked before about the other post-employment benefits, I'm required to disclose for you the information for the most recent 3 years' worth of valuations, so you can see what the accrued liability has been, okay? And you can see that it's at $31,485,000. Back in 2010, and looking at that, first time the presentation was required, is $27,848,000. So over that five-year period of time, you can see that it's grown $3 million plus, okay? On page 51, because you have to show for presentation purposes your share of the teacher's retirement system asset and the employee's retirement system liability, we're required to give whatever your proportionate share of the asset is or the liability. and then what the actual amount of the covered payroll is, and the dollar amount of the share of the asset or liability. On page 52, with respect to the two retirement systems, what did the district contribute on the first row? And obviously, you contribute 100% of whatever you build for. There are some local governments that don't do that. That's why the schedule's laid out as such. What is that covered payroll? And then as a percentage of our covered payroll, what does that contribution represent? It's just interesting information. I don't know really that it's useful for anything at this point, only because the two retirement system boards set the rates. You have nothing to say about what the contributions are going to be. But GASB thought this was going to be helpful, so we're required to give it to you.
Do we use these, this kind of run rate in our forecasting when we forecast for next year?
We base it on what
ERS
and TRS estimates the rate,
which is
very close.
Well, yeah,
it's pretty close.
For next year?
We don't have the rate yet.
It doesn't come out yet.
We just published it. It's like, I don't remember the exact rate. It hasn't.
It's slightly down.
Yeah, slightly
it's
down.
Very slightly
and,
down.
And TRS, I think they were saying it might even go up.
I thought this was until January.
Correct. In the summer, they're talking about it might go up.
On 53, there's a reconciliation of the original budget to the final budget. So we know we talked about the encumbrances and then the budget revision for the extra money for the compensated absences and then a calculation to show that you're in compliance with the 4% under real property tax list, Section 1318. We looked at page 54 before. Page 55 is a reconciliation of your capital assets, and that's for the statement of financial position. And then behind that on page 56 starts our report. It's what's known as the report in accordance with government auditing standards. And so because you've expended more than $100,000, which we know you've expended more than $750,000, we're required to do different audit. It has to do with compliance with financial reporting and laws and regulations. The report is a clean report. We had no findings. I think that's the most important part of this. Behind tab 2, the single audit, they've changed the single audit requirements and how the testing takes place. So we're going to be working on this during the latter part of this year. The report's not due up to the federal single audit clearinghouse until March 31st, 2017. You're slightly above the new threshold of $750,000. I was hoping you were going to be under $750,000. But you couldn't do it, which is a good thing to some extent, right? So that will be forthcoming to the Board of Education. Behind tab 3, as you recall, the extra classroom activity funds really aren't governed by the school district or business office. They're the children's money in conjunction with the faculty advisors. It's a business experience. So there's a report. It's a cash basis report. So sometimes this is a little confusing because I'm looking at what's collected, and some of the disbursements may not have taken place until the summer. So you have to kind of try to figure that out. Basically, what this is showing on page 3 of this is that the clubs in the aggregate started with $105,000 in round numbers. There's about $250,000 of money that flows through the clubs, and there's $114,000 at the conclusion of the year that's available for those clubs to use. The records are maintained by, obviously, the treasurer. They're on Quicken, and so there's information that we audit as part of this process. We're looking at the cash receipts. Is there student involvement? Is there backup? Do we get an understanding as to what it's about on a sample basis? We look at the disbursements. Is the request for funds supported by an invoice or some other supporting documentation? Is it approved? And in the sample of transactions that we looked at, there was good information, so the district was in compliance. Behind tab 4, then, is the work that we do starts with a risk assessment, as I've explained to the board at the planning meeting. So, you know, how do we feel about the controls that are in place? What's the tone at the top? So, you know, I've described the tone at the top as being really good. I mean, the board is very involved based on the information that they get. Then we go ahead and we test, and then we make a determination as to whether or not we think the account balances substantiate whatever the numbers might be. And as a result, we have not issued any communications with respect to any internal control-related findings, no significant deficiencies, no material weaknesses. And I hope you appreciate, when you look at page 2, that it's a very short management letter, and there are no new comments. I really want to congratulate Carol and her staff. I think they really do a very good job. In the extra classroom area, just to go through this real quickly, there was a communication sent to the various club advisors, and there was a lot of follow-up with those advisors, so we had suggested fundraising, statements be prepared and reconciled to the books and records, and that was done. And so that seems to be a good procedure that's in place. There are certain trips and related activities that take place in the extra classroom activity fund that I've just suggesting be evaluated by the business office as to whether or not they belong there or should they be handled in a different manner. Not that I see anything improprietous, so I want to be really clear about that, but there's a question from the state as to whether or not things like field trips belong in an extra classroom activity fund or they should be governed by some other procedures and controls. In the school lunch fund, despite your operating loss for the year, you still have a surplus. Okay, and what's a surplus? So the federal government basically doesn't want you to have more than 3 months' worth of expenditures set aside. Fortunately, you still have more than 3 months' worth of expenditures set aside. So if you had another operating deficit, and I think to the president's point, okay, at least you have the ability to have the food service program survive. And then the last item the district's in the process of taking care of. So that's the management letter. And then behind tab 5 is my communication to the board. And so basically, if we had any difficulties encountered in performing the audit, if the audit wasn't in accordance with the standards, and I give you the standard-setting bodies that we have to follow, there's 3 of them. It would be communicated here, so there's nothing like that communicated. The timeline was great. I need to say this is the first school district that I'm presenting a financial statement report to. So, I mean, Carol and her staff worked really hard to get the books closed. I really appreciate that, and I really think it's important because it gives you information on a timely basis. So I think that's all good. Adjusting journal entries are attached to this, and so I just want to be clear about the adjusting journal entries. Of the adjusting journal entries, the first one affects the fund financial statement, so that's what the district's books and records look like. The rest of the adjusting journal entries are to get the books and records from the modified accrual basis to the accrual basis.
What do you mean adjusting journal entries? I don't understand.
Okay. So adjusting journal entries means we get a set of books and records. We get trial balances, and we get support for the trial balances. And we audit those numbers on those trial balances. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that we say, you know what, we have additional information that you may not have had when that trial balance was generated, and this really has to do with that first journal entry, okay, we're going to propose as the auditors that you book an adjustment to your books and records because we have information that maybe you didn't have the chance to evaluate. Okay?
So you get the records, you look at them, you say, well, given all the information we have now, this should have been recorded in this particular way.
Correct.
Okay.
Exactly. Okay. So there's one. We proposed one, which is kind of unusual. Okay. One is nothing. Okay. We have proposed in the past many entries, not so many here, but for other districts too. And the rest of the adjusting journal entries, as I mentioned, would not be posted to the district's books and records. They're entries for lack of a better word, for memorandum purposes, so that you can gain an understanding as to what that accrual basis.
So you're saying move it from one. I don't mean to interrupt you. But you're saying move it from one line item to another line item within the thing.
Correct. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So what this one has to do with the way encumbrances and accounts payable are treated.
So it's okay. Got nothing to do with the dollars in the audit or anything like that.
It's no.
Move the $1.62 million.
It's recast
from W300125 to whatever.
Correct. Right. It's a recasting of a transaction. Yeah. It's not picking up a transaction that was missed. Okay. And so all these entries, you'll be able to see them on those accrual basis financial statements. So that's pretty much my report. Any questions from the board?
That was exciting, Joe.
I can't beat what just took place before me. So.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, board. As you know, we have actively engaged in phase one over the summer of the capital bond. So I know the board has has been involved with bi-monthly, right? Walkthroughs and been given, I think, up to this point, 10 reports throughout the summer, 9 or 10 reports. But I thought it was important for the community and as well as the board just to have an update of where we are today with phase one. So I asked Gary Crowell, I'm glad he's there, and Marina Ingolia just to update the board. And before Gary starts, no, come on, I'm sorry, Gary. Before you start, Marina, I don't know who's going to speak first, but you know, I can't say enough, and I know you've all heard this probably in my opening conference day speech, but the amount of work on the maintenance, the building, and grounds crew was just enormous. And, you know, with their regular job that they have to do every summer, and now on top of that, the additional work and the work that had been done very quickly, I can't thank you all enough, Gary, and then, of course, the entire crew, because they really were phenomenal. They really were, and I know at one point in time, all of you were asking, I think it was in June, you know, will we be able to do this? Will we be able to pack up all the teachers and move them to a staging area, get them back in time until the buildings be structurally ready for the students to arrive? And because of them, the answer ended up to be yes. We were confident then, but at certain times you get nervous because there's a lot of work being done. So I just want to publicly say thank you.
Thank you.
To all of you. And I don't know, Raina, if you want to start a little bit, just to...
Just to echo Mr. Stewart, it really is interesting, challenging, and exciting when you see two worlds collide, like the education world and the construction world, interact with each other because, you know, typically they don't. But I really am so impressed with our staff across the board, the patience of the faculty, the challenges that the buildings, grounds, maintenance personnel have really taken on in as we're continuing with phase one and hoping to wrap up phase one of the capital project early on in the fall. You know, as everyone knows, you know, the goal of this project was to improve the condition of major systems in our schools, including cesspools, masonry work, window repair, asbestos removal and floor replacement, the track renovation as well. And I think the most cumbersome job was the roof repairs here at Clayton Huey and the secondary campus. So as the majority of the work was definitely moving along, you know, we hit a few bumps along the road with some issues with installation of drains. You know, we did have some water enter into buildings. I think it was right after our last meeting when we were here on the first day. But when something like that happens, you know, I'm very comfortable in saying that in the process, and we're approaching the end, there are lots of checks and balances in that process to make sure that if there is an error that does occur or something that needs to be redone, it has to be redone. The project can't close out without it. You know, for example, we have our, you know, the installers of the roof working with the manufacturer, working with the architect and with the construction management team, with our personnel to make sure all those pieces ultimately are set in place. You know, Gary can definitely elaborate on the particulars, but just as an example, you know, in order, you know, the manufacturer gives us that 30-year warranty on the roof. And in order to get to that stage, Mr. Grillo, the architect, who is really the one of the main overseer of the project, the architect of the project, has to sign off on those things. And even to every little, for example, joint expansion has a particular drawing, and if it's not good enough for his standards, it gets sent back. So, you know, that's what, it can slow things down enough, and of course, you know, quite a bit, but, you know, we want, of course, we want the project done efficiently, but the most important part is getting the project done right to make sure that is, ultimately a secure, you know, watertight roof. And Gary's going to elaborate also on how we get to that point, the testing.
Right. Thank you, Raina. Thank you, Board. Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Thank you for your support over the summer. It was very helpful. And, again, I want to thank the staff for being so supportive and understanding. All the administrators in both buildings have been extremely supportive and understanding with respect to the movement and the staging and the installation and working, especially now as we're coming to the close of the construction project. It was an arduous project. It was although a small project in the scope of projects, it was for us a very huge undertaking because we had to work externally and internally at the same time with various types of programs, abatement programs, flooring programs, roofing, septic systems, which required county, state, local EPA, and everybody to be part of that. So putting all those pieces together was vital in order to come to some type of a completion date, and we're doing well. As Raina stated, we have a couple of issues that we're resolving now as we speak. We have some drain issues which were retrofitted improperly, which Siplast, the manufacturer, Milcon, our contractor, and the architect, and Raina and I have been overseeing to make sure that they are doing it properly. They have installed some of these new drains to eliminate the problems.
Is that why there were leaks? The drains were done wrong?
Yes. There were three problems. The problem at the elementary campus directly behind you by the library and the two 20 and 21 room were due to some flashing that was incomplete at the time that a storm rolled through that caused that damage, which along with the other damage. The damage on the K-wing with the leaks was due to flashing along and the improper installation of some of those Siplast drains, which are now being rectified.
What are you saying, Siplast
is manufacturing. I'm sorry. So
what's the idea? It's a flat roof, and you have to have a drain that doesn't run off.
Yeah, it's a three-part component roof, and the way it's developed, they sit interactively between some of the foam layers as they're joined, and then the
cap out to the gutters or something.
No, it drains internally into 4-inch and 8-inch drains inside the building. Building up along the trusses and then comes down. Those are all hidden drains. We have some exterior drains which you see along the outside of the building, but a majority of those drains that we were talking about now that are being addressed are the ones that are on the roof that are internal, that run internally. You can't see those.
So the grill will come, and while there were the three problems, did he go and look at every single one?
Yes.
And say whether
yes.
or not they
absolutely.
Right?
We had the manufacturer's representative here, the owner of the
manufacturer's representative for the roofing material.
That is correct. At every point, the manufacturer's rep has to be part of the discussion whether or not they changed the diagram, changed the way the drains are, changed the retrofit product itself, because we need to, as Raina said, have that 30-year guarantee warranty in place.
Right.
And in order for us to get that, we have to make sure that all of those components are in place properly, fastened properly, and shielded properly. And that's where we are right now. We are working on that. We're moving forward on all of those, which addresses both the drain problems over at the high school and the drain issues over here at the K-Wing, and that flashing problem has obviously already been resolved. They've eliminated that problem. So right now, as far as roofing goes, they're moving into their final stage for finishing up the final sheet of roofing on about four or five different areas. The fascia material, as many of you may have seen, has been completed on the media center. That's the green fascia material. This building has yet to have that done. They're still working on doing their ballasting, the parapets and the paracoat, which goes up along that. They're going to start to do that. And then in the next week or so, we should see some type of trim work, if you will, for lack of a better term. You'll start to see that coming.
What's the target date for them to be completely done and with the roof?
So the original contract date was August 26th, I believe, Carol. At this point, Milcon Corporation is working without being paid. This is on their dime, if you will, for a lack of a better term. All of their labor, all of their work, anybody that they have to bring in is all on Milcon now because they've gone beyond their date. So that they're in the contract, it states that
we bought a job of a finished group. That's what we bought. That's what we.
That's exactly.
So when are they going to be done with that job? Whether or not they're getting paid,
they're going to finish it. Absolutely, and they want to finish it as much as we want them to.
Where is that going to happen?
Well, looking at the scope of work that needs to be completed, and
the scope hasn't changed from the initial work, right?
No. We're just looking at everything and looking at all the dynamics of getting all the approvals from the architect. I'm anticipating probably the first or second week of October when they would be completely out of here, when the manufacturer would be able to give us something in writing, which would be our guarantee. They do give you a certificate with a book of compliances that we have to adhere to, on our end.
That's just the roof.
That's just the roof.
So you were to say that 6 week of delay is a result of...
Well, for many different reasons. A part of it, a very small part of it, was weather. As far as we see 3 or 4 days of bad weather over the summer. That's all we had. But roofing companies work on a different principle. They work on a projection, a past history of weather patterns from NOAA, and they work on the 30% principle. So what happens is, if there's the possibility of rain in the forecast that is 30% or better, they hold off on doing any rip-offs or anything that's going to be impacted by rain. So we've had a few of those days, maybe one or two a week in each week of the summer, of those 9 weeks in the summer, which that also delays it. There were also delays where that were on Milcon, where their staff were not being staged properly, and that's on Milcon. That was our construction management team, SCC, would reach out to them and tell them to bring more personnel on, and they would.
Have we incurred any time or expense, whether it be your time or otherwise, as a result of their delays?
All of the breaches as far as water. Carol and I and Raina have been in discussion with Milcon. I have compiled a list of materials along with the administrators of loss. We've compiled time for all of the custodial staff, all of the outside vendors that were required to do some initial work that may have been damaged during a storm, meaning HVAC lines, when they're on the roof trying to move things around. The fees will be incurred by Milcon. I've been in communication with Milcon. We've sent emails back and forth. They've acknowledged the fact that there's a lot of monies that they...
I just asked you, we're talking almost twice as long, right? I mean, this started June 20, what?
Last day of school,
which is 28?
That's correct.
And it's supposed to be done August 26th.
Six, that is correct.
So that's like 2 months, and we're looking at maybe not twice as long, but six extra
right.
weeks almost. Okay.
Absolutely.
Got it.
So that's the roof issue, but we are working on the roofs. The septic systems are all complete. They're working fine. We haven't had any issues with them, which is great. I know it's only been about 7 or 8 days, but we haven't had any issues, which is good. I think if everything goes well, I think we'll see substantial savings from this point on with respect to our septic overhead as far as, of course, for pumping. The doors are scheduled to be installed. The hardware is scheduled to be installed the week of the 19th, which is next Monday. So we have a schedule. They're going to start. Excuse me, I have to put my eyes on. They're going to start the middle school. That's Area 1 on the 19th through the 20th.
At night.
This is all done. And they're going to start work in the middle school, high school, then halfway down, starting October 1st, Clayton Huey. And then we'll go back to the high school on October 5th, then back to Clayton Huey, and then finish off in Clayton Huey in different sections. We've developed the profile for all the locks and the keys for the lockdowns, because we wanted these doors, as you know, to be as secure as possible. So over the last couple of weeks, Bill Thompson and myself have sat down with the key core manufacturer, which is Stanley Best Corporation, and developed the key profile for the buildings so that we have individual keys that also allow us access for lockdown. So if any one teacher is in another room, they'll be able to use their key. A teacher from the elementary key of school can be in a high school, and if there's a lockdown, they could lock down that door with their key from the elementary campus. It's a very fluid system, very happy with it, and those keys are going to be given out to the administrative staff for the buildings on Friday, and they'll hand them out to their staff. So as the doors are installed, as they move forward from the 19th, those teachers will have the old key and the new key, and if they come to their door in the morning and they have a new lock, they'll know to use the new key to get in, and that's how we'll work it until we're finally done. We also have additional backup keys, and I had them give us 150 blanks so that we personally can manufacture them. Billy and I spent a couple of months learning how to program and cut these keys, so we have the ability now to cut these keys. We have all of the key codes. We have the piece of equipment, so we don't have to go outside to have a separate manufacturer or Best or Stanley cut them. So there'll be whatever a key is needed in the future, instead of paying $8.50 a key, we'll be able to do it in-house, and that could translate into, you know, savings down the road. So we're good to go with the doors. The masonry and the lentils have all been completed. I know that you walked through at the last walkthrough. Everything is done. The portico is done. All the lentils are done. We've had some rain. I've been in the rooms where the lentil repair has taken place. I haven't seen any seepage or anything in those spackled cement walls, so that's very encouraging. The front portico is looking good. Obviously, it is done for structural integrity and not for cosmetics, and that's looking good. So that's completed. Very happy with that work. The flooring, the new flooring and the asbestos removal has been completed. All of the test results came in. All of the post, pre, and mid test results. We have documentation. We have a book on that for the community or for the board to review. Those floors are in great shape.
Air test results. Is that what you're saying? Test results for the air.
And the asbestos test results, because they tested different areas in the room while they were in there. So all of those results for the flooring and for that abatement has been put in play, and we have that. The asphalt in the back has been done.
Are they going to repaint their lines back there? Or?
There were no lines in the back parking lot as far as parking lines, but there were...
I heard there was four square lines that aren't there.
Well, the playground lines, yeah, those would have to be replaced. I wasn't aware of they're being removed. It may have escaped my eagle eye. Again, the high school track. We are still awaiting Lantech Corporation to come back for the punch list. At the superintendent's directive, we went and reached out to Lantech.
What did they say about that? The grass? The grass?
They historically say that it's not an uncommon occurrence, and that what happens is when they lay the base coat before they put the paint down, if any grass seed or anything should fall in between the base coat and that paint, that if there are any seedlings in there, they will come up and it will look like the seedlings grow from the base coat and up. So when you pull them out, it looks like they're growing straight down. He said that is not an uncommon occurrence, but they are coming out to investigate it and take care of it.
And it's still growing there? That's the spot where it was growing before. There was that
exactly right.
Grass seed there.
It's not below, but it's not going into the ground below.
No.
Oh, okay,
no.
Where it is.
But it was growing. It was growing in between, but that is not an uncommon occurrence. He said it gets stuck in the little crevices and grows up. They are also going to be dealing.
What are they going to do about it?
Well, if they have to, if they find when they get there that there's an excessive amount,
yeah.
When they get there, they most likely will take that section out and redo it, clean up underneath the base coat.
Yeah, but that's what we don't want them to do. I think
that's what they do normally. The tracks, I know.
And they'll take care of the lane lines also. But we are again awaiting Landtech to come back. That we've reached out.
Those guys, that's where the grass was before. It was all kind of. That's what it's from. It's not from a few pieces of grass.
But we have to reach out to them and give them the opportunity to correct.
Yeah.
To correct their.
But if they come and just spray it, it's going to be back and.
Let's see what else.
Yeah.
I think that I believe the windows. I'm sorry. The last item. The windows have been completed. I did find three of the windows that they did repair to be somewhat faulty. I reached out to them early this morning and to set up a schedule with them to come in to repair or adjust those three windows. And from the from the looks of it, all the other windows are functioning properly. I believe that I haven't gotten any responses for any of the staff apart from those three windows that I looked at this
week. This is an enormous amount of money, and unfortunately, a lot of it is not optically apparent as you drive past the school. You don't see what's going on. I appreciate your significant focus on it and making sure that it's spent right and done right, because I don't think we'll be able to afford to redo work that's done, nor should we have to. But your oversight, Raina, is certainly, and everybody's oversight is certainly very much appreciated. And while you can't see it as you drive by, when you walk in and there's not a garbage can because there's a leak, it makes it a little bit of a better place to be, where the bathrooms aren't closed because they're overflowing. I mean, this is just work that needed to get done for a very, very long time. So I appreciate the focus.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Next section, questions and comments regarding tonight's agenda only. Do you have any questions or comments on tonight's agenda? Okay. Motion to adopt the regular minutes, minutes of the regular meeting on August 31, 2016.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of the schools, the Board of Education accepts the following resignations.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of the schools, the Board of Education approves the following employee for a leave of absence, which is in compliance with the terms and conditions of the St. George's FMLA policy.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the following employee for a leave of absence from her position.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the following employee to return to service.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second. Yes.
Where are you? Mine, I was looking at the one that sent home before.
Which was it?
Okay. Yep. Motion. Yeah, that's the update. Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education appoints the following individuals as substitutes for the 2016-2017 school year as follows.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
The district recently advertised for candidates to fill various teacher and support staff vacancies for 2016-2017. Candidates were interviewed by committees, building principals, and or the superintendent. Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the following appointments.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the following contracts in accordance with the terms and conditions of the contracts, as well as of the established costs contained in said contracts, and authorizes the president to sign said contract.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action. Upon recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the budget transfers.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the treasurer's report for the month of June 2016.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the student activity treasurer's report for the middle school and the high school for the month of June 2016.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education accepts the 2015-2016 independent auditor's report.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
The Board of Education has appointed an independent claims auditor to review bills and authorize the processing of payment during the period between Board of Education meetings. Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education accepts the report by the independent claims auditor for the month of August 2016 and authorizes payment of the monthly bills listed on warrants for the month of August 2016 as audited by the independent claims auditor as follows.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, Board of Education approves the jazz ensemble and vocal jazz, approximately 50 students to attend Hershey Park Music in the Parks, Hershey, Pennsylvania on May 5th, 2017 through May 6th, 2017 at no cost to the district.
So is that just student funded? How does that work?
Student funded.
Student funded.
Friday and come back on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Through fundraising.
Through fundraising. Okay. You want to do them both at once?
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the St. Emeritus Board of Education approves the St. Emeritus varsity cross country team to attend the Brown University Northeast Championship race in Warwick, Rhode Island on October 14th, 2016 and October 15th. 2016 at no cost to the district.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the recommendations of the Committee on Special Education and Preschool Special Education for the months of June, August, and September for the 2016-2017 school year.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. You don't have to read the names on the committees.
Do
you have other names to add?
I just wanted to add Danielle Dench to facilities and curriculum.
Okay.
And Alex Dench to tech.
So we want to adopt. Okay, great. We want to adopt 20, 21, and 22 together in one group. Unless anybody's got any comments on the policy readings. Can you do that? Additional names. Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. So it brings us to the next section, which is Board of Education goals, discussion, adoption. We discussed at the last meeting. We discussed. Okay. Do you want to stick? Do you want me to wait on the goals and talk about?
Yeah. If you want to just.
All right. Well, let's talk through the goals. We'll start. So we went through last time our goals. We had some comments and thoughts. We got an updated document that we circulated. And does anybody have any further comments on the board on the goals, how we've outlined them, the targets, with the idea that obviously the only thing that's open is the scores, the target rates, and the scores, which we're going to discuss once we've got everything, including the VARS data, which we expect when, like,
mid-October.
Mid-October?
Yep.
Okay. So what I'd like to do is, if there are no other comments to this goals document as drafted, but for those scores, adopt this, get it in. Do we have the region's numbers? I don't see it on this one.
No. You guys met this morning on that, but we're not ready for that as yet.
Right. Are we ready to talk about that or not ready to talk about that?
Those numbers?
I don't know what they are.
No, they don't have the numbers yet, right? The advanced regions and the regions graduation rate, you guys are not ready for that yet.
Well, we discussed it this morning.
Unless you have the numbers. You do.
We do have the numbers. I don't know if you wanted to
talk about it.
Okay.
So what do we have for... So everything we have 99 on regions graduation, which is what it was last year and what the five-year goal was. What do we have for advanced regions? What do we believe for 16-17? Based on looking at the kids, based on, you know,
For 15, for this school year, we're looking at 51%.
You believe?
We follow the same methodology as we did in previous years.
Yeah.
The guarantee, the somewhat of a reach, and then a stretch.
So 51% is the mid number. Right.
So after looking at the cohort, individually, which we did this morning, we looked at that cohort group.
Yeah.
Talked about some details about the group. Looked at how did we grow September to June last year? We were at 46% at this time last year. This year at 44%. How much can we really expect to grow based on what we know about individual kids and where they are in their assessments?
So the gut is you've got a 44% quote unquote guarantee. You believe that?
I believe, and I don't want to say this is Ed, this is the counselors, this is the teachers, the kids, with a lot of work, similar to the type of work that we did last year, knowing what interventions, strategies worked, applying some of those same strategies and some new strategies, we can get to that 51%.
And the max that we could get to based on classes taken at this stage is what?
Is 55, but that means that every single kid who's potentially in the game right now, and we know they fall off, is 55. And that also, you have to remember, all of these numbers are contingent by the denominator number, like the total group.
Yeah.
Doesn't change, and it always changes.
Right.
So even if it changes by a few, which it has within the last week, 5 new seniors.
Right, but it could be
so
five in the guaranteed group or 5 in the stretch group.
That's just to be frank, and they're not all.
So you get students that impact that number, that divisor. Got it.
So keeping all those variables in mind.
You're saying 51.
59. Yeah.
And what do you think based on that?
From what I've seen, I think that's an attainable goal at this point.
Okay, Rob.
Yeah, I think it's not going to be an easy goal, and I definitely appreciate all the work that Mr. Caswell and all these guidance counselors did, because they really go through every student. Really, this is I think 51 is.
Annette?
I have only heard what I heard tonight.
What do you think?
Sounds like it's a good goal.
Okay, that would be good. Okay,
Rob.
Special education. Do we have a Regents diploma target for special education? Last year, I think it was...
What do we say on the low side, 82?
Yeah, so similarly, low 82, mid 85, and reach 88. And what that means is taking the special education students within the cohort, looking at them the same way we looked at all the other students, looking at their assessments where they are, taking into consideration their pathways, their graduation pathways.
When you say reach, you mean max that are able to get there is 88%?
Yes.
Okay.
Because of other pathways that some of these
That's fine. It's a max. If everybody got to where to there and passed 88%, and you believe that the goal should be
85.
And what was our rate last year?
It was 90.
Yeah. Okay. But that was a different cohort.
It's a completely different
cohort. And it's a small subset of kids.
We're looking at roughly about 15 kids.
Right.
So one child not reaching the region diploma has a tremendous effect on the overall percentage.
Yeah. Okay. 6%. 7% per kid.
That population can change as well.
Which is my point is that's the difference between where we were last year and where you're saying the goal is. Yes, it could be one child. Is my point.
We're looking at about 2 or 3 kids.
So we feel it's 80 what?
85.
Okay, I'm good with that. I like the methodology. we never had, or we didn't have a 2021, I guess, the five-year goal for special ed. And I think that the reason, this one should be 2022 as well, but I think that social policy, I think the reason was because of the cohort change. So I wonder if we should remove that five-year target and just look at it on an annualized basis. It seems to make sense to me. Is everybody all right with that? Okay, that's out. Just wanted to make sure that we didn't make that same error on the 2019-2021 throughout. I think we did it differently. 2021 school years. Okay. So we've got that. So that leaves the only opening to be the assessment scores, region scores, and the goal there, which again is to come. Anything else? Does anybody else have any comments on this? Otherwise, I'd like to get it adopted, put in the web page, and move forward. Do we adopt? Motion to adopt the Board of Education goals 2016-2017.
Motion.
Motion. Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
You got a comment?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, brings us to the next section of the agenda tonight. We'll do the capital project update already. Questions and comments from the community on matters not on this agenda?
Question?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Hi. I'm going to have a couple people sit up here with me. Is that all right?
Sure. Just, okay. We're recording, as you know, so just make sure you say your name. And...
Oh, sure. Okay. Come on up, Terrence. Good evening, everyone. President, Superintendent. Board members, my name is Harry Wallace. I'm the chief of the Uncotel Nation. Good to see you all here today. I have with me Mary Trent, who's been associated with the Center Mercer School District for the last 40 years, and her son Terrence Trent, who has a child in the in kindergarten. I'm here to discuss Terrence and Nicole, his wife, their child, who has been assigned to an inclusion class in kindergarten, which they object to. And they were not informed of the child's placement until 2 days before school started.
Yeah,
I believe it's 2 days before.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that. But I believe it was 2 days before they started, and they were not consulted with the placement. We've had attempts to discuss it with administration, and they have failed in an effort to have the child removed from placement. She is not needed. She is not a student who is required to be in inclusion class. Based on her testing and her performance evaluations, she's not intended to be there. And we were advised that many kids are put in that class as a matter of course who are not required to be in there, and that that's something that's done routinely. However, when we asked how that evaluation is done, the parents were not satisfied with the answer. And frankly, I wasn't really satisfied with the answer because there is no policy about how students are selected and included in a inclusion class, whether and if they're not required to be there. So the school, in my opinion, doesn't have a real policy of objective criteria of how students who are not required to be inclusion are selected for that. So based on that, and the parents have voiced a strong objection to having their child put in there. It's not against the law to object. It's not discriminatory. And it is certainly not against any rules and regulations of the school. So based upon that evaluation, the parents' wishes of not having a child in that class should be respected. I didn't think we'd have to come to this point because the options that are available to them now are pretty dramatic. They could either pull the child out of school, they could homeschool, they could transfer the child, or they could take it even further than that. And the fourth option was to come before the board. So I believe that the board, if they look at this in a rational manner, will come to a conclusion that the parents' objections to having the child placed in an inclusion class over their objection should be respected. And that's the only reason why we're here. and they've asked me to speak on their behalf because they wanted to. It's no reflection on the school board. It's no reflection on the district. It's no reflection on this on the teacher in the class. There's no reflection on this on the principals or any of the staff. It is an objection the parents make, which is a viable one, and it's one that should be respected. And we ask you to make that reconsideration.
So you're just so that I'm clear, you're appealing in your statements a decision that was made by the building staff. Principal or you know, the building staff. Have you followed the process and gone through and made it had a request and discussion with the superintendent through the normal
system? Yes, we've done
it. So you're appealing the decision of the superintendent to the board, which is placement of the child. If you could, I'm going to ask you to, in writing, so that we can have our counsel look at it and make a decision, give us the basis for that appeal. We're in a public session. I don't know the child. I don't know the child's name. I don't know the basis.
I think that was appropriate.
Yeah, exactly. You're 100% right, and that's why I'm asking for you to do it separately in writing, and we'll look at it. I don't know the basis for the appeal, the objection to be in that classroom. If you could put that together and send it in, we will certainly look at it. You know, I have full confidence in every single one of our teachers and every single, you know, classroom across the board and all of our administrators. 100%. I would have no problem if I have three kids, if my child were in any one of these classrooms from an educational perspective, regardless of, you know, what level they are. And that's where I come from speaking personally. But from a board perspective, I'd like you to put it in writing. We can take a look at it, see what's been done. Talk to our counsel, and we'll certainly get back to you.
I certainly respect that. And your opinion as to how you would handle your child personally is certainly something that is very personal to you.
Yep.
I may have the same, you know, opinion that you have. But my point is, and the point of Terrence and his family, is that they have the option to disagree. Mm-hmm. And it's their child, and it's their placement. And in every other situation, their opinions should be respected. And this is a situation that it should be as well. Now, whether we agree with that or not, it's not illegal, it's not improper, and it doesn't violate any state education or any St. Richard's school regulations, for that matter, because they don't exist. So I know you have confidence in staff, as we do. But the point is, we'll put it in writing, and we'll give you a written explanation for why we think it's appropriate. But again, it's their choice, in our opinion. And that choice should be respected.
Understood.
But given all that, again, we're not angry at anybody.
It's about doing
what's right for this child.
Sure.
That's it.
Understood completely.
Okay?
Understood completely.
Do you want to say anything else, Terrence?
Well, I have two kids in the school, a fourth grader and one in kindergarten. The reason being, I feel like the kindergartner one should be, I think she's more of a follower, if she don't like something, she won't say nothing. It's hard to get stuff out of her. So I just feel like if I could get her through this year without this exclusion class and get into a regular classroom, I think it would benefit her in the long run. Like if I got this fourth grader, if he was in an exclusion class now, I would be fine with it because I know he can adapt to the situation. It's not about the kids. It's about my daughter and the way I view her and the way I can see in her attitudes changing already. She's come home just different, hyper, not as attentive or just I can see her changing already within these, you know, just what, week, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think she's, if it wasn't, it's the way her character is and the way I see that I would just rather for her to be in a regular classroom so she could learn this year how to, you know, try to, you know, be a better student.
Okay, for the record, that's Terrence Trent.
That's the parent. Father.
And
I'm
this is Mary Trent, the grandma.
My problem was, to me, why do you have placement tests for kindergartners? And I know she placed very high. but she ends up in an inclusion class. I don't understand it. And also, when you're going to put them in a class that does have a title to it, inclusion or whatever you call it, instead of just she's going right into regular kindergarten, somebody should have sat down with the parents, I feel, and say, this is what we want to do. We think this is best for her. And that wasn't done. You know, I've been in the school system for years. My 5 kids graduated from here. I got 7 kids in college, grandchildren in college right now. So education is really important to me. And I don't think this is such a big deal. If he doesn't want his kid in this class, no matter what you say it is and how great it might be and how good it is, and I would like to know if people that said that their kid was in there, were they told it? Were they asked? What do you think? We want to put your daughter because we think she would be good with these students. I don't know. Nobody asked my son. Nobody asked my daughter-in-law. And I just don't think it's the right thing to do because to me, what is a placement test? I can't get it. I really just can't get it. Why have it if you're going to put her wherever you feel like, oh, this teacher loves her? That's what I got as an answer. No, that's not an answer. I'm not stupid. I'm not a fool. You know, explain to me why she's there. Mr. Stewart did, I have to say. He when we went to him, it was explained what the inclusion class is. But I still think the decision should be up to the parents. It's one kid. Why do we have to go this far for something to me that shouldn't be that hard to do? I mean, is all the classes full? You can't put her in, you know, one of the other. I mean, I don't know. But maybe even say that. Well, you know what? We got 25 here. We're not. And you did tell me that there was only a certain amount of kids that can be in each class. But are they all full? I mean, what? I can't understand why we had to come here to the board for, to me, something that should have been respected by my son and his wife. And that's all I have to say about it.
Thank you very much.
Well, we thank you for your time.
Thank you. Okay. Thanks for coming.
How you doing, Josh?
Oh, we will be back to other meetings too, just so you know.
Good. Thank you.
Good.
Okay.
Try to
good night. Just to remember, any other questions, comments from the community on matters not on the agenda tonight? No? Dates to remember, next Board of Education meeting will be October 5th, 2016 at 7:30 p.m. in the district office. Motion to adjourn to executive session for purposes of what is she? Discussing any matter which may propose pending current litigation, collective negotiations under the Taylor Law, and other matters the disclosure of which would result in an unwarranted invasion of personal privacy. Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thanks.